Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. So that Utah monolith, it's gone now. Just disappeared. But I kind of wanted to talk about it and some other desert mysteries and possibly some clues to who or what put up the Utah monolith. I mean, it was just discovered, what, 11 days ago by a helicopter flight crew. And it was a bunch of Utah Department of Public Safety officers and wildlife resource officers. They were doing this thing they do every year where they count the bighorn sheep population in a rugged area of southeast Utah. And after spotting an unusual object, they flew directly over and they were like, whoa, 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 turn around. There's this thing back there. We've got to go look at it. So, I mean, they were obviously puzzled and they decided to land the helicopter and investigate. You know, it's counting sheep, and you know, and then you find something exciting, and you go, this is much better than the counting the sheep. And so the helicopter pilot had the opportunity to investigate the monolith, and he realized it was made of shiny silver metal and somehow installed into the ground in a remote area of red rock. And the metal, it stuck out about 12 feet above the ground at what appears to be the point of a small canyon. And there was no indication as to who installed the monolith or how it was transported or assembled. They assumed at the time, you know, hey, it's probably, you know, some, quote, new wave artist. And he said they were joking around that if one of them suddenly disappeared while investigating the object, then the rest of the men should make a run for it. I mean, it is just sitting out there in the middle of nowhere. You know, it was definitely appeared to be man-made. It didn't look like it was dropped from above. In fact, it's almost impossible because of the cement and everything. They thought it was maybe something the NASA stuck up there for satellites, but NASA said no. And the men said it's the strangest thing they've ever seen from the helicopter. And then the Federal Bureau of Land Management, you know, was going to determine if further investigation was warranted. And one of the things is, it's not from another world. And it took a lot of work to construct that object into the rock. But, and this is going into what we're going to talk about tomorrow, is that the object favors the monolith that appeared in Stanley Kubrick's film 2001 Space Odyssey. Now, they didn't give the exact location because they, you know, didn't want people visiting the area and getting lost or stranded in the desert. And because of the pandemic in Utah especially, rescue missions would be challenging. So they just said, hey, it's, you know, it's remote, highly inhospitable. And they even scrubbed their flight plans from FlightAware for the date in question. But of course, everybody found it anyway. Everybody went to Reddit to discuss the monolith, and one user had pinpointed the location on Google Earth. And this is a very important clue. He said the object appears to have been there since October of 2016, and if that user had pinpointed the correct location, there was nothing there in 2013, but by 2016, there's a new object visible. Now, it doesn't explain who put it there or how it could be so clean years later. I mean, it looked newly installed when you look at the photos, and I'll attach a photo so you can see it if you haven't. You know, and if the officers conduct an annual sheep count in the region by helicopter every year, how did it go undetected all of those years from 2016 on? Reddit users also noticed that since there were lines by the base, maybe a rock saw had been used to put it into the ground. It appeared, you know, to be held together with screws, and it wasn't one large, consistent piece of metal, but rather segments of metal pieces together. Now, geologists kind of poking fun at the use of the word monolith, because monoliths are generally made of rock or stone, not metal. Think like Ayers Rock in Australia. That is a monolith, technically speaking. But the Art newspaper compared the monolith to the plank sculptures of minimalist artist John McCracken. He died in 2011, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about him and whether or not it could be him, because his gallerist believes it's definitely McCracken's work. But his statement's already been met with conflicting opinions, and no one can say for sure. It could be just some novice artist paying homage to McCracken's work. If the object didn't appear on Google satellite images until after 2016, you know, that was well after McCracken's death. I mean, he didn't come back from the dead and place art in the desert. It has to be someone else. Some people said, hey, maybe it's that guy Fawnhawk who enjoys putting sculptures in remote locations. She recently put a freestanding arched mirror in sand, but she commented she can't claim the monolith in the desert. She says she's planning secret monuments and something she often thought about, but the Utah monolith is not in her work. The Department of Public Safety wasn't really thrilled about it because it was destructive to the rock, potentially disruptive to the sheep if it became a trend. And they, you know, issued a notice, hey, it's illegal to install structures or art without authorization on federally managed public lands, no matter what planet you're from. I mean, it turned into, you know, a fun little joke about aliens and things like that. You know, they didn't take it that seriously. But, you know, the people found it and they started, you know, going to it and they really didn't want it. I mean, it's a fun little mystery. Maybe it's a social art experiment. I mean, photographers and artists like canyons and deserts. If you watch a video of the discovery, the area is kind of like a gallery room. And the acoustics, even of that particular area, mimic one. It's a unique, you know, carved out nook for an installation and perhaps a conversation piece for anyone who happens upon it. Like, how the hell did this get here? What's curious in the story is how long something can or can't go undetected in the age of Big Brother, you know? And as soon as it arrived, almost, then it was gone. That was the announcement yesterday. The three-sided metal structure was removed on Friday evening by an unknown party from the land it was found on, and the government said, we didn't do it, because they said it was private property. Like the actual monolith, so they didn't do it. You know, the department again had fun with it, and they said, it's gone! Almost as quickly as it appeared, it's now disappeared. And they could only speculate that aliens took it back and they used a bunch of emojis for extraterrestrials. But, you know, as the week went on, I mean, they talked a little bit more about how it was installed. And they said somebody took the time to use some type of concrete cutting tool or something to really dig down almost in the exact shape of the object and embed it really well. And they said, it's odd. I mean, there's roads close by, but to haul the materials to cut into the rock and haul the metal, which is taller than 12 feet in sections, to do all that in a remote spot is definitely interesting. But what was it? Was it John McCracken's work? I mean, he is a sculptor. Fond of science fiction. Like I said before, he died in 2011. His son, Patrick McCracken, told the New York Times that his father had told him in 2002 that he would like to leave his artwork in remote places to be discovered later. There was a guy who visited the structure and posted videos of it on Instagram, and he said it was located near Lockhart Basin Road, which is south of Moab. And the sheriff's office is the one who has to decide whether they're going to investigate, and I don't think they will. I really, you know, nature returned it back to its natural state. I mean, they're, you know, the only thing left was a rose snapped in two. So that, when you think about that, the fact that it was removed and then that rose was left snapped in two, it kind of makes you wonder if it could be McCracken. You know, because he did have this affinity for science fiction. And the gallerist, like I said before, who had exhibited the artist's work since 1997, who represents the estate, he says that it's a bona fide McCracken. But if that's the case, then McCracken pulled it off without ever mentioning a word to his dealer, or his friends, or his family. And everyone in the art world is completely divided over whether the story is plausible, you know, or is it a prank? But the son, he goes back to that night in 2002. And he said his father was living in New Mexico in a house kind of overlooking a mesa. And he said, we're standing outside looking at the stars. And he said something to the effect of that he'd like to leave his artwork in remote places to be discovered later. So did he think his father was joking? He said, no, I thought it was something that he would do. He was inspired by the idea of alien visitors leaving objects that resembled his work or that his work resembled. And this discovery of a monolith piece that's very much in line with his artistic vision. You know, he said that his dad wasn't an average sort of dad, that he believed in advanced alien races that were able to visit Earth. To his mind, the aliens had been visiting Earth for a very long time, and they wanted to help humanity get past this time of our evolution where all we do is fight each other. You know, I mean, McCracken read science fiction all the time, believed in time travel, hello, John Titor, and extraterrestrial life. He was a friend of the actor Leonard Nimoy, the guy who played Spock. And Leonard Nimoy was a huge collector of McCracken's work. I mean, if you go back and you look at photos of McCracken sculptures, I mean, they're similar, you know? But everybody says, you know, you can narrow the pool of candidates to the millions of viewers who watched 2001 Space Odyssey. That monolith is like this gleaming black structure, you know, that spawns evolutionary leaps. You know, when the apes see it, they start using tools and they become intelligent beings. You know, other people who've known McCracken, this is, I don't think it's a McCracken. Because one of the reasons is it was unlike him, you know, to commit pranks like that, you know. Other artists who've known McCracken just says, you know, it's a hoax. One artist, a guy named James Hayward, who was a close friend of McCracken's, said that the object in the photo is kind of crudely made. And he looked at the corners as much as he could and said that they were made by a machine called a brake, which bends metal. And when you bend metal with a machine, the corners aren't sharp and crisp. They're rounded. And if you look at McCracken's stuff, it's much more simplistic for sure, because he, you know, would do them in color and then polish them, and, you know, and he had this trick of making them appear to dissolve in front of your eyes into something else. And, you know, that his were kind of in between a painting and a sculpture. And, you know, wanted you to feel this communication where you're connecting the Earth to some kind of higher realm and that kind of illusion. So, but the antithesis to that is that sometimes, especially with McCracken's lesser known sculptures, they were just in stainless steel. And he relied on some fabricators. And one of these fabricators said, it could be, you know, it's just kind of, even the gallerist who thinks so, that it's McCracken, he has partnered the gallery, says no. And then was going back and forth and said, I don't even really know at this point. I think it's an homage, you know, and the whole 2016 thing, it kind of feels like it couldn't be his. Because let's say he had installed it prior to his death. And, you know, he had a tumor and everything. So I think he would have had to do it a couple years before his death. Maybe 2009. We're in 2020. And the way people found it so easily, and that it's not that far from a road, and there's probably people who do hike in there. Somebody would have seen it on one of these annual things. I'm not even sure it was 2016. I mean, that's just, you know, well, on Google Earth, they say that you can see it in 2016. Okay. So somebody just left it there quietly for 4 years. And then as soon as it was discovered, they were able to go over there and get rid of it in 3 or 4 days. And to do so, even though people during the day were going to see it, like the people on Reddit who took videos and knew exactly where it was. So they would have had to go in overnight. And the idea that they did it overnight, they knew how it was installed and the best way to take it out. I mean, the only thing that remains was this hole containing the concrete platform, which was used to anchor, you know, the proper term probably is an obelisk rather than a monolith. And there was just that single red rose, stem snapped in two. There was something similar that happened back in 2001. And this kind of makes sense in a way, because it was New Year's Day 2001. 2001 Space Odyssey, right? And the headlines were the same. It was Seattle. Mysterious monolith materializes. So Utah wasn't the first to have a monolith pop up randomly. In Seattle, on Kite Hill, in Magnuson Park, there was a Seattle monolith. And it was a guerrilla art installation by a group of Seattle artists calling themselves Some People. And it was a hollow-made structure made of steel, approximately 9 feet tall by 4 feet wide, and it weighed about 350 pounds. And get this, it was buried in the ground and embedded in concrete, like a quick-set epoxy poured into the tubes, and the rebar on the bottom of the monolith was inserted into the tubes. So that gives you some background on how these things can pop up quickly. I mean, the overall cost for constructing the monolith was $250. So authorities at the time believed the foundation for the installation was poured December 30th, 2000, and the installation was erected on December 31st. It was then moved to Duck Island in Seattle's Green Lake, and this artist, Caleb Shaber, came forward to claim it. And for a while, it was stored under the Fremont Bridge while plans were made to install it semi-permanently in Magnuson Park. And after it was installed in the park, it was removed to a residence and then moved again. And this group, Some People, intended for the origins of the monolith to remain a secret, but that changed after the structure was continuously moved. And then other people stepped forward in connection, and about 50 other people were involved. So is it this migratory monolith? You know, on January 3rd, 2001, the monolith disappeared. All that remained then was a hole containing a concrete platform used to anchor it, and in the place, you know, a single red rose, stem snapped in two. You know, I mean, so is it an homage to McCracken? Is it an homage to the Some People in Seattle? Because Shaber, one of the artists, he said that his group had nothing to do with the monolith hijack. So, I mean, that's kind of interesting. And then, at that original site in Seattle, someone installed a rocket-like aviation fuel tank nose down on the original site during the night of January 6th to 7th, 2001. So are we going to see the same thing in Utah in a couple days? Maybe. It kind of reminds me of this Cadillac Ranch public art installation in Potter County, Texas. And it's a Route 66 tourist attraction. And, you know, everything the wildlife officers don't want for Utah. So it's located in Amarillo. And the art group Ant Farm buried 10 brightly painted Cadillacs nose down in the desert in 1974. And the main artist of the group was from San Francisco and reached out to this millionaire, Stanley March III, to see if he was interested in funding the art project. As it turns out, he was, and he became the main patron. So after the cars were installed, they were covered in graffiti, something the original artist welcomed, as it brought people in direct contact with the art and generates conversation. And periodically, the cars are repainted solid colors to reset the canvas for new artists to express themselves. It is legal tagging. And there's even normally spray paint cans laying around, and you can just pick them up and paint something real quick. It's still a good idea to bring your own cans just in case there's that one time that nothing is left in the cans on the site. But don't expect your art to last long. It can be gone as quickly as 1 day or 1 week. Generally, nothing lasts past a week because there are regulars to the site. And the cars were originally located in a wheat field, And after the land sold for development, a local contractor quietly moved them further away from the city to private land. And the new location made it possible for more people to actually drive by the installation and stop and enjoy them. And Route 66 made them legendary. By 2013, that rich guy, he didn't own the Cadillac Ranch. It was transferred to a family trust sometime before his death in 2014. And, you know, the movie Cars, that Pixar movie, it depicts a car range, which was a direct nod to Cadillac Ranch. And even Bruce Springsteen has a song that came out in 1981 about Cadillac Ranch. Now, over the years, the doors and trunks and windows of the car have disappeared. By 2019, at least one Cadillac was set on fire. And before you even reach the cars, the air is thick with the smell of spray paint. You know, and finding something that juts out of the sand isn't anything new. I mean, man-made or natural. Think about the petrified, you know, forest of Bulgaria. You know, northwest of the city of Varna on the coast of the Black Sea, there are stones mysteriously standing in a desert-like area as if they were planted like trees. And it's known as Pobeda Kamani, which means hammered stone. And no one really knows how exactly they came to be, but the area was designated a natural landmark in 1930. And the area spans over 13 square kilometers, and it is one of two rare natural deserts in Europe. And the stones are hollow on the inside and appear to be stuck directly into the sand. And the stones range from 16 to 22 feet high. Scientists refer to the area as Little Stonehenge. And you can visit there, you can go inside, cost you $2. Once inside, you may make a wish in the magic circle located within the stones. And when you walk through the area, you're actually walking on what used to be the ocean floor 50 million years ago. You know, the Black Sea covered the area, and the mysterious stone-looking trees are the result of that. They kind of look like volcanoes if you look at them from up above. And outside of the desert, Varna has a seaside garden, which is one of the largest landscape parks in the Balkans. And within that park, there is a bridge of wishes, waiting to grant you anything that you wish for, as long as you cross it while walking backwards with your eyes closed. And there's another great desert mystery out of Death Valley. It's just past Kettle Junction, and it's another art installation where people are encouraged to leave a kettle and message for passerbys, you know, in the Death Valley National Park. And it's home to what residents call the racetracks. Those are the slide marks that large stones or rocks leave behind after mysteriously moving. And scientists and residents are really curious as to what makes the stones in the Mojave Desert move on their own. The stones were spotted moving on their own by hikers who then alerted scientists to the phenomenon. And they dubbed them sailing stones. And for years, researchers were just gobsmacked as to what's causing these 700-pound stones to move. Because the stones appear to travel the greatest distances when no one's looking. I mean, theories have run wild for years. You know, everything from the ghosts to aliens to the government. More logical theories are centered around weather patterns, like Earth's gravity and vibration and magnetic fields. In 2001, the University of California at San Diego, they sent researchers to the desert over a year's time, and they set up test rocks on the lake bed in order to conduct a controlled study. And they had high-tech weather station cameras placed to monitor the rock activity over a course of 5 to 10 years. And the rocks needed to move significantly in order to devise a theory. By 2013, the rocks proved to have been moving, with the most movement recorded just after December. I mean, this is the kind of thing that just blows your mind. A 700-pound rock just moving on its own on flat ground. So researchers believe they were able to kind of chronicle events that set the rocks in motion. So during the wintertime, water from rainfall turns to ice during the evening due to really low temperatures. By morning, the sun comes out and melts the thin layers of ice. Light winds drag the stones over the ice layers as they melt into ponding streams that evaporate. I mean, the stones move only a few inches per second, so it's not usually enough for the naked eye to pick up unless someone's really honed in on the stone or using a time-lapse camera. But over time, the phenomenon puts the stones at great distances from where they originated from, and that is noticeable. Now, the university researchers claim they can't be 100% certain of their theory. It's just the best they have for now. The controlled test used small rocks, and the rocks that people are interested in are the big ones, you know, the 700-pound ones. And many people reject the new theory and argue that something else is going on, like vibrations or gravitational pull. And their theory, the researchers, the theory doesn't explain how hikers in the summer are seeing stones move. It's scorching hot in the desert. I mean, the hottest temperatures on the planet. And the rocks are weighing deep into the soft earth. How do they slide with no ice or water? And how do enormous stones maintain their direction of travel without changing their orientation? How do they leave racetracks that look as if they were dragged through the dry, warm sand? Of course, the signs at the racetrack claim the mystery is solved, but is it? Really? Deserts are mysterious places. I mean, you never know what history is going to reveal after decades of the wind blowing the sand around. It could be dinosaur bones or aircraft, tombs, treasures, tunnels. Can't wait to see what we find next. I'll talk to you guys later.